when you listen to her music, you let go of fear and you embrace the concept of being hugged by something with absolute compassion and love. So the sound of Turiya, Alice Coltrane, in Hammond organ or piano or harp or her string arrangement is direct from God. You know, there's no filters in there.
Hello, guitar legend Carlos Santana speaking about one of the most original musicians with whom he has ever worked, Alice Coltrane. Today's show is dedicated to the late pianist, organist, harpist and composer, a truly unique artist who made an immense contribution to jazz and who today continues to inspire musicians in many different genres. It seems like a good time to reassess her artistry and indeed look at some of the other artists involved in the spiritual jazz scene. But firstly, let's immerse ourselves in one of Alice's best-known pieces, the title track of her classic 1970 album, Journey in Satchidananda, featuring a man who travelled down many musical roads with her, the saxophonist and flautist, Pharoah Sanders.
Thank you.
The Hypnotic and Timeless Journey in Satchidananda by Alice Coltrane, the subject of today's show. And over the next hour, you'll hear music from Alice and John Coltrane, Don Cherry and Sun Ra. And joining me on this journey through spiritual and universal sounds is Manchester-based trumpeter and Alice Coltrane devotee Matthew Holsall, who selected some of his favourite Alice tracks. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Really looking forward to hearing those selections. For those who are not familiar with the Alice Coltrane story, she was born Alice MacLeod in Detroit on the 27th of August 1937, and her early life was steeped in the city's rich gospel, blues and bebop traditions. Taking up piano as a child, Alice soon became very serious about music and later went to Paris in the late 50s to study classical and jazz with the legendary pianist Bud Powell, before returning to America to gig with musicians like the vibraphonist Terry Gibbs. She met and married the legendary saxophonist John Coltrane in 1965, eventually replacing McCoy Tyner in Coltrane's classic quartet and working with John up until his death in 1967. Matthew, we opened with Journey in Satchidananda, which is one of Alice Coltrane's signature tunes. What's so special about her sound and her approach to making music for you?
There's so many things that I'm attracted to with her music. First and foremost, the incredible selflessness that she has in the music and the freedom, the meditative quality and free nature of her music, and the use of instrumentation from all over the world, Indian and Japanese and American instruments and traditional folk instruments as well. It completely inspired me with my own music because I was writing even at that point in my life. It gave me a freedom to embrace things like the koto, the harp, the Indian bansuri flute. It's like a world sound, and something that I'm quite passionate about, and obviously Alice Coltrane in her meditation, is this idea of oneness and the world being at one. One of my albums is actually called When the World Was One, and I love this idea of the whole world being joined together. And in music, you can definitely achieve that through the instrumentation you use and the cultures you embrace. So.
Well, that's a great reference, actually, this idea of oneness, because it's very important, obviously, in what she did and what John Coltrane did as well, and what a lot of the spiritual jazz artists did too. And you talk about the range of instruments, anything from the piano to the tambura to the oud from North Africa, which features on some of her albums as well. And also, very importantly, she was a great harp player. And you've selected your first track, which really showcases her as a harpist.
Yeah, I mean, the harp for me is just, especially in terms, it's got such a magical, meditative quality to it. It's like the way it flows through Alice Coltrane's music and the way she uses it. It's very unique, actually. There's not many harpists that perform in that way. And the use of space, it just feels incredibly free and open, very heartfelt and honest.
And really communicates. I mean, she's a great technician, but she also knows how to communicate.
Yeah, you definitely feel like you're in the room with Alice Coltrane having a conversation.
Fantastic. Let's have a conversation with Alice Coltrane now. This is Wisdom Eye from the album Eternity. Thank you. Wisdom Eye from the album Eternity, showcasing the solo harp playing of Alice Coltrane. Matthew, it's a really stunning performance, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed. It's such a beautiful, spacious, honest solo from Alice Coltrane, and it really is one of my favourite tracks on the album Eternity.
A central part of the Alice Coltrane story is her discovery and embrace of Indian philosophy, religion and music. I was lucky enough to interview her in 2005, and she told me it was the opportunity to attend a lecture by the guru, Swami Satchidananda, that was a real turning point in her life. She travelled to India several times and also took the name Turiya Sangitananda, which in Sanskrit means the transcendental Lord's highest song of bliss. And Matthew, transcendental is a key word, obviously, in the Alice Coltrane story, but in your personal story as well.
Yes, when I was 14, I had an amazing opportunity when my parents moved house. The nearest school to me was actually a Maharishi school. And in that school, we studied transcendental meditation. We actually did Sanskrit and also yoga. And it completely changed my outlook on life. And the music I listened to opened up. Everything in my life opened up. So it was a real turning point.
So you were engaging with Eastern philosophy, religion and music, and we certainly hear Alice doing that, that engagement with Eastern music through the use of the drone or the tambura, this sitar-like Indian instrument played upright using four open strings, as well as the generally hypnotic and, as you say, the meditative atmospheres in the music. In 2017, I presented a special documentary on Alice Coltrane called Her Sound and Spirit. And from that documentary, here's how Alice's son Ravi, an excellent saxophonist, remembers his mother.
She played music every day. Music never left her life, you know, despite the fact that she was not publicly performing or putting out records. She lived a very musical life, you know. And as far as jazz and improvisation goes, I knew that she could still burn, you know, that she could still really get behind the piano and play incredibly. I knew that was still very much a part of who she was. I would often go to Los Angeles and play at a place called Catalina's Bar and Grill. And sometimes my mom would come down to the club and sometimes she wouldn't. But when she would, of course, I would beg her to come up to the stage. And she would on some occasions. And again, every time she got up there and played, I mean, people's eyes and ears would just light up. And somebody asked me, it's like, if someone can play that way, why not just play that way all the time, every day? That should be, you know, her primary focus and goal in life, you know. But it was sort of like a reserve, something that she would tap into.
Why do you think she didn't use that ability more frequently?
I think that she felt that there was a higher purpose in music than to just get up and burn or play great. You know, I use that phrase just as a, you know, almost like a fan, you know, like, wow, she got up there and just killed, she smoked it. And it's like, for her, music wasn't about that so much. It was, again, just about expression. You know? So she, at some point in her life, she chose to express herself differently.
Ravi Coltrane talking about his mother, the inspirational Alice Coltrane. Matthew, you run your own label, Gondwana, and you've been releasing music since 2008, where the influence of Alice and John Coltrane and Pharoah Sanders, among others, is very strong. Firstly, tell me about running the label, actually setting up your own label. I mean, it's very much a spirit of independence. Is that something that you take from John and Alice Coltrane as well?
Definitely. I mean, the fact that they were both trying to set up a record label together and they had their home studio that they were building, it's a beautiful, inspiring idea to do something like that. Whereas John and Alice were obviously a partnership, myself and my brother set up Gondwana Records. He was the graphic designer and I was the sort of recording engineer, producer and composer side of things. And so we just wanted to do it because we had a vision that was unique to ourselves. There was no one else really doing that, especially in Manchester. There was no spiritual jazz music being released at that point. But we could hear musicians performing and being inspired by Alice Coltrane and John Coltrane.
So people like the saxophonist Nat Birchall.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I remember seeing Nat performing in Matt and Fred's Jazz Club, and he was doing beautiful covers of John Coltrane that still to this day hold close to my chest, you know. So
great. Well, tell me about the first piece of music that we're going to hear from you. This is a track called A Faraway Place from your album When the World Was One.
So this is a piece of music inspired by Alice Coltrane, and it features Rachel Gladwin on harp and flautist Lisa Mallett, and it's completely about the sort of escapism and the journey that you can have through meditation. Thank you.
Faraway Place by Matthew Hulsall and the Gondwana Orchestra. I'm Kevin Lejean, and you're listening to a special edition of Jazz Lineup celebrating the music of Alice Coltrane in the company of my special guest, Matthew Hulsall. The music of Alice Coltrane, and Matthew's for that matter, is often called spiritual jazz, which includes iconic figures like Albert Ayler, Yusef Lateef, Don Cherry, and Ferrer Sanders, who we mentioned before. Matthew, what do you understand by the term spiritual jazz?
Well, I guess all these artists that we're talking about, a lot of them were heavily influenced by meditation and spiritualism and philosophies of like the Eastern philosophies. With my music, obviously I experienced meditation from the age of 14, and I wanted to incorporate the experience into my music. So things like the bass is very much a repetitive kind of frees the mind up while it's flowing, and the harp is very open and loose and fluid, and there's this feeling of sort of freedom and free flowing and free thinking in the music.
So the music is really serving a higher purpose, as it were. It's not just about music.
Yeah, it's very selfless, actually. It's more about creating a beautiful environment for the listener.
So all of these artists that we've been talking about, the Pharaohs and the Yusef Lateef, Don Cherry, etc., they're all individuals. They have a very different sound, but each in his own way has pursued this ideal of a universal sound, which draws on folk traditions from Asia and Africa. But they also made music with an intense emotional content, a real capacity, as you say, to lift the spirit. And the founding father, to a large extent, who we must mention, is John Coltrane, whom Alice openly credited as her greatest source of inspiration. So here's one of his really sublime compositions. I know that you like this a lot, Matthew. It wears its name well. It is like a prayer on the saxophone. It is the timeless spiritual. Thank you. John Coltrane's classic spiritual. Now recently, there's been a real surge of interest in Alice's music. I mentioned the documentary earlier, and there's also been an excellent album, The Ecstatic Music of Alice Coltrane, Turiya Sangitananda, a compilation of music recorded between 1982 and 1995, issued by David Byrne's Luarkabop label, and it's music that was only previously available on cassette from the ashram that Alice founded and ran in California. And Matthew, you were aware of the music she was making at this time, weren't you?
Absolutely. We were digging deep for every Alice Coltrane release we could find, and we actually discovered these cassettes, myself and Nat Birchall, the saxophonist, and we used to sit listening to them and talking about this and the meditation and the experiences of this wonderful music.
So she was a swamini, a spiritual leader as well as a musician. I mean, she left the music industry in the late 70s, but as we can hear from the Luarkabop compilation, she was still experimenting a lot with electronics and synthesizers as well as Indian devotional music. So even though she was in this spiritual world, I mean, she never lost her creativity, did she?
No, and I remember hearing Ravi Coltrane talking about her at this period and the rest of the family, in fact. And she never stopped making music. Every day of the week she was making music. And she was also using the home studio a lot still at this period. So she would record a lot of the chants in the ashram and then overdub things like strings and percussion and bring in jazz musicians. It wasn't that she wasn't interested in music. She was definitely very productive, but it was for a different purpose.
Well, we've heard Alice playing. Let's hear her singing now. This is her version of the Indian spiritual, Om Shanti.
Om Jai Ram, Jai Krishna Hari Om. Om Jai Ram, Jai Krishna Hari Om. Om Jai Ram, Jai Krishna Hari Om. Oh, Jai Krishna.
She was a great pianist and harpist, but she also sang, and there she is on Om Shanti, the ecstatic music of Alice Coltrane Turiya Sangeetananda. You're listening to Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3, and I'm still joined by my special guest, Matthew Hulsall, and we are celebrating the music of Alice Coltrane. Now, on the album that I mentioned, the ecstatic music of Alice Coltrane, there are these fantastic sleeve notes, and there's this great quote from Alice herself. She says, "I do get very engaged spiritually in the music, because it's a spiritual language for me. It's not a musical language. I'm expressing, articulating deep feeling and deep experience in life, in spiritual life, in God." And the next piece of music that we're going to listen to, Matthew, which you've selected, is by an excellent artist from California that you've been working with, the vocalist Dwight Tribble. And the piece is Dear Lord, which is a John Coltrane composition to which Dwight actually wrote lyrics. Now, this is a very special piece of music for him. Can you explain why?
I remember Dwight bringing this into the studio. We recorded it at the Fish Factory in London, and it was quite late at night, and he'd kind of been protecting this piece of music for quite a long time. It meant quite a lot to him, and the reason being that the only other time he'd ever performed it was in a concert that he did where he shared the same bill as Alice Coltrane. It was at UCLA, Royce Hall, and that was in Los Angeles. And on that bill, Alice Coltrane played piano, Ravi Coltrane on saxophone, Reggie Wokeman on bass, and Jeff Watts on drums. And Dwight actually performed Dear Lord in front of them. And after the concert, Alice called Dwight and said, you know, I was really touched by this piece of music you performed and the fact that you'd written the lyrics for John on this piece. And she said he would have loved it. It kind of stayed with Dwight for a long, long time. Still now, every time he sings it, when we tour and stuff, he says to me, this is, you know, every time I think of that moment in my life when Alice said those words. And it's just a real special tune. And you can hear it even on that recording session, how emotional Dwight gets and how deep it is to him.
Well, he was obviously deeply touched by that moment, and he's put that into the music. Let's listen to Dear Lord by Dwight Tribble featuring Matthew Halsall. Dwight Tribble, a man who's worked with some real legends of West Coast jazz, people like the pianist and band leader Horace Tapscott, and more recently the saxophonist Kamasi Washington, and a man who was given the endorsement of Alice Coltrane and Ravi Coltrane as well for his version of that fine piece of music. Now, Dwight spent a lot of time in the church. That's very important in his whole story. And the church in Detroit was central to the early part of Alice Coltrane's life. And she always kept that gospel flavor in her piano playing. And she also had this unique, piercing sound on the Wurlitzer organ. But she was a great string arranger. She was very, very inspired by Stravinsky, among others. Matthew, you've chosen a track from Alice's Transcendence album, which features some really adventurous string arrangements.
Yeah, this album's really beautiful. The use of strings, when I first heard it in a record shop, I just immediately connected with the sound of the strings and the freedom that she wrote with strings, and it's just really special to me.
So she writes in a way where she can do these really lush chords with the strings and also very, very turbulent lines as well.
Yeah, it's so free. It's incredibly hard to not just to write that music, but to get performers to execute that. It must have been an amazing experience in the studio watching it.
Well, just before we go to the track, let's hear again briefly from Carlos Santana, who had the amazing experience of working in the studio with her.
I closed my eyes, and the way that she wrote down the strings, I felt like I was witnessing the Pacific and the Atlantic Ocean singing. In fact, I recommended that we push to have Alice Coltrane's music in elevators and shopping malls and parking lots, because this music would help humans stop being so viciously violent. Thank you.
Well, we've heard from Alice Coltrane, the pianist and the vocalist, and there's Alice Coltrane, the string arranger. The track is called Radhe Shyam from the 1977 album Transcendence. So multifaceted, so diverse and so adventurous. And I suppose change is a constant in Alice's body of work as well, and you can definitely see it in the titles Transcendence, Transfiguration and Translinear Light, which was the title of the last recording she made just a few years before her death. And several of the other key trailblazers of what is called spiritual jazz are also no longer with us, but their music remains as influential as ever. And Matthew, I'm sure you know an album called Cosmic Music, recorded by John and Alice Coltrane, a fairly rare record, but one that's definitely worth seeking out. And an artist who drew much inspiration from the cosmos and who created his own cosmos through sound is the visionary bandleader, composer, pianist and organist Sun Ra, a really unique figure. I take it you're a fan.
Yeah, I absolutely love Sun Ra. He's crazy, and I love the film Space is the Place as well. And in fact, he actually named Pharaoh Sanders Pharaoh. He gave him the name. So.
And the music that he made really is very, very unique, isn't it? If you think about all of the different influences that he draws on and the whole world or the worlds that he created as well as the sounds that he created.
Yeah, he definitely pushed jazz out in a different way. And I think that, I mean, obviously John Coltrane was also influenced by sort of space and the cosmos, and so was Pharaoh and everyone. And I think that's that kind of open expansiveness of jazz goes well with the philosophies of the universe.
Well, let's hear a fantastic piece of music by Sun Ra. This is from an album called Spiritual Jazz Volume 4. It's a track called Enlightenment.
Joy is enlightenment.
Enlightenment.
Space, fire, truth is enlightenment.
Enlightenment.
Space, fire.
Space, fire.
Sometimes it's music.
Sometimes it's music.
Strange mathematics.
Strange mathematics.
Rhythmic equation.
Rhythmic equation.
The sound of thought is enlightenment.
Enlightenment.
The magic light of tomorrow.
Of tomorrow.
Backward. Sadness.
All those of sadness.
Forward and onward.
Forward and onward.
All those of gladness.
All those of gladness.
Enlightenment is my tomorrow.
My tomorrow.
Has no planes of sorrow.
Of sorrow.
Hereby.
Hereby.
My invitation.
My invitation.
I do invite you.
I do invite you.
Be of my space world.
Be of my space world.
This song is sound. Of enlightenment.
Of enlightenment.
The fiery truth of enlightenment.
Of enlightenment.
Vibration.
Vibration.
Sent from the space world.
Sent from the space world.
Is of the cosmic.
Is of the cosmic.
Starry dimension.
Starry dimension.
Enlightenment is my tomorrow.
My tomorrow.
It has no planes of sorrow.
Of sorrow.
Hereby.
My invitation.
I do invite you.
I do invite you.
Be of my space world.
Be of my space world.
Hereby.
Hereby.
My invitation.
My invitation.
I do invite you.
I do invite you.
Be of my space world.
Be of my space world.
Hereby.
Hereby.
Our invitation.
Our invitation.
We do invite you.
We do invite you.
Be of our space world.
Be of our space world.
Hereby.
Hereby.
Our invitation.
Our invitation.
We do invite you.
We do invite you.
Be of our space world.
Be of our space world.
Hereby.
Hereby. Our invitation.
Thank you.
trumpeter, multi-instrumentalist, and all-round universal sound traveller, the great Don Cherry with a track called Humus, and before that, the very singular Sun Ra with Enlightenment. Two artists who are featured on an excellent compilation, Spiritual Jazz Volume 4. It's part of a series that's brought to you by the independent label Jazzman. We've been celebrating the music of Alice Coltrane and other artists who are part of the wave of spiritual jazz that continues to resonate today. And interestingly, the music made by Alice Coltrane has inspired people outside of jazz, kind of beyond jazz. So you've got the likes of Radiohead, Laura Veers, Paul Weller. They're all fans. Matthew, that strikes me as being very significant. You know, she's somebody who touched a lot of musicians in lots of different areas.
Absolutely, and I think it's that thing again where with her music, she really pushed it into a dimension of her own and it became unique. And she was a great role model, a very strong sort of female artist. And, you know, not just in the pop and rocker industry, a lot of hip hop and breakbeat DJs and producers, such as DJ Cam, the Cinematic Orchestra, and Flying Lotus, they've all sampled her music and brought it into, you know, 2017 and beyond.
Flying Lotus being her great nephew as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've actually seen performances of Flying Lotus with Ravi Coltrane, and on stage he was incorporating electronics with harp and saxophone and strings. And it's a really exciting time when people bring in spiritual jazz into modern electronics and stuff.
That's also a fantastic family legacy as well. So the great-nephew, Stephen Ellison, a.k.a. Flying Lotus, the son, Ravi Coltrane, the saxophonist, and also the other son, Oren Coltrane, another great saxophonist. Those three figures are keeping her flame alive.
Yeah, and it's I mean, rightly so, and I'm sure they're very proud of Alice Coltrane's legacy.
Well, time's almost up for today. Matthew, thanks very much for being part of this celebration of the music of Alice Coltrane. It's been great to hear your thoughts on her music.
It's been lovely to dig into the Alice Coltrane collection again and celebrate such beautiful spiritual music.
Okay, let's listen to one of the essential pieces of music by Alice Coltrane. We had to finish the show with this. This is Prima from Transfiguration. From me, Kevin Legendre, till next time, bye-bye.
That was Prema by Alice Coltrane, ending this week's Jazz Lineup, and the programme will return at the same time next Saturday. This week's programme was produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. Now for a look ahead to tomorrow evening.
The early 20th century saw an astonishing number of successful blind black bluesmen.
As a blind person listening to that song, it's really powerful.
The BBC's Washington correspondent, Gary O'Donoghue.
How did this group of blind musicians, faced with all the disadvantages of race, segregation, disability and poverty, achieve celebrity in their own day?
It was precarious for sighted African Americans. It was downright dangerous for blind ones.
Blind, Black and Blue. Tomorrow evening at 6:45 on BBC Radio 3.
Good evening, I'm Chris Barrow. In a few minutes' time, we're crossing over to the Met in New York for Strauss's Elektra. Before that, we just have time for some Debussy ahead of the 100th anniversary of his death on the 25th of March. There'll be a number of special programmes here on BBC Radio 3, so stay tuned for them. Here is his Danse Bohémienne for piano, performed by Jean-Yves Thibaudet. That's Debussy's Danse Bohémienne, played by Jean-Yves Thibaudet. Later at 10 o'clock, Robert Warby uncovers the music of the American theorist and pioneering experimentalist James Tenney. And it's the UK premiere of a major work by Manila-born ethnomusicologist and composer José Maceda. That's later on. And you're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's just coming up to 6:30, time for Opera on 3. And now we join listeners worldwide for the next in this season's operas from the Met.
We are live at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City, and we're in for a short and shocking Saturday matinee, Elektra by Richard Strauss, led by the Met's future music director, Maestro Yannick Nezet-Séguin. Soprano Christine Gerke stars in the title role of the revenge-obsessed princess. Soprano Elsa Vandenhaver is Elektra's sister, Chrysotomus, and mezzo-soprano Michaela Schuster makes her network broadcast debut as their tormented mother, Clytemnestra. They're joined by Mikhail Petrenko and J. Hunter Morris in this searing drama. Stay with us.
And we'll rejoin New York in a moment after their short advertising break. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. And now let's return to New York.
Yes. The score of Strauss's Elektra is almost as notorious as the blood-soaked family it depicts. It's especially challenging for the conductor leading the massive orchestra and the soprano singing the title role. Christine Gerke, our Elektra, revels in it.
There's so much in this role. There are so many different directions you can go with the text, with all of the emotions, with the relationships. They have moments where they are screaming at each other. And then they have moments where they are so tender, and you can see how desperately each of them wants the other to understand what they are trying to explain to them. She will be talking about how she is going to avenge her father's death and make things right, but underneath you will hear something completely different. You know, it's what's so cool for me about this music. You do get two stories at once, so you have to be on your toes constantly or you miss it.
Maestro Yannick Nezet-Séguin marvels at the role that each of the orchestra's 99 instruments plays.
There is nothing better orchestrated. For example, the Wagner Tuben, when they come in, it just changes the darkness of the color right away. We have a bass trumpet, we have a bass oboe, we have all of these strange animals, but they just add to the unbeatable power of this music. With all the forte pianos, the sforzato, the pianissimo here and the fortissimo there, there's rarely ever a time where you need to ask the orchestra, please don't play too loud. If you really do the score, it's crystal clear. Doesn't mean it's easy.